Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 349th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Once a Metro, as well as the other soccer sites on the SB Nation family. So come on in, chat room is open, talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability. As we review the first leg of the conference finals in MLS playoff action, before I even go there, you know, it just has to be said that, and while I understand why we're having to have some of these games during a midweek situation, you know, once again, I find it a bit tiresome to see these games on a Tuesday night, a Wednesday night, a Thursday night. I mean, look, I understand, you know, Toronto, who's red hot right now, technically, you know, they're sharing their soccer stadium with the Canadian Football League team, the Argonauts, who left Rogers Centre, formerly known as the Sky Dome, where they shared with the Toronto Blue Jays. Still, it just really, really annoys me that the league has to cater somewhat to the Argonauts because, you know, Canadian Football League, I know they have their own business. They have their own scheduling. You know, they got to cater to that, and that's understandable in some ways. But still, though, it just really bothers me that it has to be done this way. And all I can say is that I wish they would just go back to having all these playoff games on the Sunday. On the Sunday. So all I can say is that for the league office, you know, they got to find a way to fix this situation if they can, or maybe, you know, the Canadian Football League has to find a space in downtown Toronto or somewhere in the Toronto area to build their own stadium because, you know, I just feel like it's not fair and it's not right because we're trying to get away from these types of situations. Now, once again, Seattle, it works. And, you know, Atlanta, it works. Because, you know, there is an NFL owner involved with the team. And plus, they do fill it up. So we got to give them credit for that one in Atlanta as well as in Seattle. We have to give them credit. It's just, you know, and I understand at the same time, the San Diego Chargers moving to Los Angeles, and they're playing in Carson where the Galaxy play, and the Galaxy's getting a nice rent check too. So, you know, at least they're doing that, you know, the opposite way of how it used to be back in the day. So there you have it. But still, though, I don't know. I mean, I just – look, if it works, it works, and that's great. But still, though, I'd like to see some form of a change if it was possible, especially up in Toronto. Not trying to become a hypocrite or anything like that, but still, though, it is what it is at some places, and there's nothing much more you can say or do. It's working so far. Everything's looking pretty good so far, and that's always a positive. Give credit to the BMO grounds crew because they're making that grass pitch looking pristine every single time Toronto FC plays on it, but still, though, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. Of course, we all know about what's going on with Columbus, how, you know, it's just looking really, really dire, even though the, you know, the business people in Columbus are trying to find ways to buy the club away from Anthony Precourt. It just doesn't look like he's going to budge. He is set in his ways. And, you know, when the recorded interview with Alex Stanek from the Massive Report podcast, we're going to we're definitely going to get more information about that as I play that one later on tonight. But still, though, it just goes to show you, sadly, that MLS doesn't want to fix anything. It goes to show you that MLS just does not want to fix a damn thing about this situation, because they'd rather see an original charter member move away and just do – they want nothing to do with Columbus, Ohio, and that's a shame. That is a shame. You see, once again, it's just a terrible thing to see happen, where, you know, you've had consecutive World Cup qualifiers against Mexico in that stadium. And while, you know, when I said that Columbus is now under siege because Mexico finally won there, just like, you know, the U.S. finally won, it was a friendly, but still they've gotten, they've rattled off three consecutive matches, five straight points. Five straight points, I should say, but at least undefeated in three straight. The friendly win, Michael Orozco Fiscal getting that first ever win at the Azteca, and two straight World Cup qualifying draws over there. The 0-0 during Jurgen Klinsmann's tenure when they were qualifying for the World Cup in Brazil. And now, obviously, the 1-1 draw where Michael Bradley got that nice chip shot goal, and, you know, well, unfortunately, that's all for naught now, but still, though, it's just tough to see that happen, to see where Columbus is falling apart. And it's not by their own doing. It's by intent by the league and by Anthony Precourt. And this is where, you know, I feel like it is just an absolute disgrace. An absolute disgrace of what Don Garber is doing with the situation that he put the Columbus Crew in, because let's be honest with ourselves here. This is a joint venture between both Don Garber, Commissioner of Major League Soccer, as well as the owner of the Columbus Crew, and Anthony Precourt. He didn't want to wait long enough to make this thing happen. It looks like he was intentionally trying to start these wheels turning right off the bat. So all I can say is that if you feel like the league office has basically found a way to intentionally make this move without any care or hope, or at least to attempt, you know, a refurbishment job of MAPFRE Stadium / Columbus Crew Stadium, that's where all hope has been originally lost. Now, I don't want to say there's no hope. I don't want to say there's no chance of a way to save the Crew. I hope there will be. But with everything going on and everything that we have seen so far in what has been going on, I just don't feel good about it. I don't. I really don't feel good about it. And all I can say is that I am hoping there will be a resolution. I'm also hoping that MLS and Precourt will listen to business people inside Columbus, Ohio, and let them buy the club away from him, and so he can be a part of the MLS to Austin, Texas situation. Because the truth is, the Aztecs and the USL were patiently waiting to come back, and now this has muddied the waters. San Antonio FC might want to go to MLS. That has also not so much muddied the waters, but now it's a big tar pit because that idea is probably gone by now. I think it's really, really terrible, and I really hope the MLS owners will come together and they will actually have an opportunity to do something the correct way, and that is to not allow this move to happen. I think that's the only way we're going to see the Columbus Crew stay in Columbus. It's just absolutely a terrible thing to see and a terrible thing to happen if one of the original members of MLS is pulled out after 20 years of community, 20 years of passion, 20 years of seeing what has been happening, where the Columbus Crew not just winning an Open Cup championship, but also an MLS Cup championship. It needs to remain in Columbus, this club. So I just hope that Commissioner Garber understands what is going on here right now is a serious mistake. Do not remove the Columbus Crew. I understand your corporate discussions and your stats and the financial ramifications and blah, blah, blah. Once again, it would be a serious mistake for you, Commissioner Don Garber, to allow Anthony Precourt to make this move. And at the same time, tearing apart the Columbus Crew, and good on most of the Austin soccer fans who truly want a pro team back and they don't want it done the way it's been doing so far. It's just careless, heartless, and soulless. And I just feel like it's the wrong way to go. It shouldn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen. But I have to be honest with everyone. I really, really have to be honest with everyone. I don't know if it's going to be enough to save the Columbus Crew. I want them to be saved. They deserve to remain in Columbus. Because, as everyone will probably say, this doesn't happen in Europe, which is true. But all I can say is that this situation is not good, and I want to be honest with everyone. All I can do is just show support to everybody in Columbus, Ohio, if and only if they truly do get saved, and at the same time, do you feel good about it? Right now, I don't know. There's a lot more that needs to be looked at. There's a lot more that needs to be discussed. But I only hope, and I really do hope, common sense and cooler heads prevail in trying to keep the Columbus Crew inside Ohio, inside the city of Columbus. Let's go ahead and make it happen. Keep the Crew in Columbus. Hashtag save the Crew. Because this would never happen in a dedicated football town like Huddersfield over in England. This would never happen. Absolutely not. So let's hope this doesn't happen in Columbus. I hope it doesn't happen in Columbus. But we'll have to wait and see what the situation is, how it's done. And all we can do is find a way to just keep our thoughts and prayers and hopes that the Crew do not get moved. All right, everybody, conference finals first leg review. What are we going to see? What are we going to talk about? Well, I'll tell you who we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the Seattle Sounders. What an impressive match they had in down in Houston at BBVA Compass Stadium, a place they normally don't have success in, but they do in the playoffs. And joining me, of course, my SB Nation colleague from Sounder at Heart, Dave Clark. Dave, when it matters the most in a place that you barely see your side get a result in, they come up big when it matters the most, and once again, Seattle takes advantage.
Yeah, not only Seattle. Let's add some more context to that. Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver, all three of the teams, have never won in Houston. So pulling off a win in the playoffs down in Houston, downright impressive. We haven't seen a lot of road wins in the playoffs so far, particularly in leg one. Columbus clearly did it, and that's what put them into the Eastern Conference Final, was their dismantling New York City that they dismantled in leg one.
Yep.
And now Seattle was on cruise control by the second half. They got to rest Clint Dempsey for an entire half because they didn't need him. When you can make a halftime sub just to rest the best player on your team or the most potent attacker on your team, things are going well. When you can use the North Carolina four corners system from the pre-shot clock era to just run the timeout, just passing amongst yourself deep in the attacking third, but not really going for goal, that's how dominant they were. And while it might be disappointing they didn't get more goals, let's just – in the playoffs, you don't get more than two goals. Well, again, Columbus. But you don't really get more than two goals in an MLS playoff match on the road. So getting the two is huge. It's such a great thing, and they've set themselves up very well for next Thursday's game.
Yeah, they really have. And I have to say, you know, the opening goal in the 11th minute, what a great goal by Svensson. I thought Lodero found him perfectly, and he buries that sucker in. And I'll be honest with you, this really should have been 3-0. I know Willis, he's been a pretty good keeper when he has to stop penalties in the big games. And even though correct call, Jahlil Anibaba pulls down, I believe it was Jovan Jones, he pulls him down, denying of a goal-scoring opportunity. Not just that, but it's a penalty. And not just that as well, but it's also a red card, and Houston goes down to 10 men the rest of the way. Just absolutely great stuff from Seattle, attacking and attacking and just finding ways to look dangerous.
Yeah, they 35 minutes or so, they looked like exactly like you want to see Seattle play. When they're at their best, they can attack well, and they did. And it was an onslaught. I mean, Jovan had two goals that he missed that should have been a goal. Will Bruin had a second that I thought should have gone in. Obviously, Nico Lodero probably should have made that penalty or at least had somebody follow it. I don't really think anybody made an attempt to do anything but watch it, you know, roll out. It's not like it was deflected and quickly went out. There were lots of opportunities for those first 30, 35 minutes. Seattle playing the attacking style that they didn't do in Vancouver, they might only break out about half their games on the road, but they definitely do it at home. So, for me, against Houston, when you can attack a team that's so strong defensively, when you can beat them on set pieces after their strong season on set pieces, I think is just a testament to what so many people expected at the beginning of the year from Seattle, and that was to have a chance to go back to MLS Cup.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And you know what? How about that second goal? Of course, the former Houston Dynamo attacker, Will Bruin, finds a way to get into space. I mean, let's be honest. When you're down to 10 men and you're trying to defend, and let's be honest, Houston was not defending the way they should. Will Bruin gets into an open space. Jovan Jones makes a great cross, I believe, just outside of the Houston area. And Will Bruin just has to just walk into that spot, places the header perfectly, beats his former side, and it's 2-0 to the good just at the stroke of halftime. It's just unbelievable to see what we have seen so far with this Sounders team on the road. And I think I agree with you. I mean, when it's the most important time of the year, when you normally don't have positive moments in a certain venue. But when it's that time, the most important time to get it, Seattle got it.
Yeah, they did give up a couple of decent opportunities, too. I mean, there were some moments in defense where I had questions. Manotas, mm-hmm. You know who I'm talking about.
Manotas.
He broke free.
Manotas.
Yeah, and angle, but it was not a good shot. What was that, about 48, 49, I think? It was early in the second
mm-hmm.
half. And
yep.
He was in one of those spots where you expect something on target, and instead it was wasted. And I think that was really the moment when, you know, there were two moments where Houston really thought that they could stay in it despite being down a goal and a man. The first was with Willis when he got the save, the Dynamo looked emotionally ready to get back in the game and did a fairly good job for a few minutes. The second goal kind of changed that. And then coming out of halftime, that missed goal, that missed opportunity was the other one where I really thought that Houston was going to threaten the Sounders. After that moment, I think that there was just too much and they were just too deflated. And some of that was because the entry of Victor Rodriguez meant that the Sounders were an even greater possession-based team, that you're up a man and you're already a better possession team. The turnovers were minimized, and Seattle just had to wait it out at that point.
You know, you're absolutely right there. I thought Schmeitzer, tactics were correct. Formations was correct. I thought what he did to prepare for Seattle, spot on, 100% approved. I loved what he does. And like I said in the past before, you know, I've always felt, well, we're not going to go back into that discussion, but let me just say that I've always liked Schmetzer, how he manages Seattle the way that he has so far since taking over for Ziggy Schmidt. He's done a great job so far, and everything he's doing, once again, it's turning to gold once again for Seattle. And all you have now is another 90 minutes to go to face this Houston Dynamo team. Not only are you ahead on aggregate, you're ahead on away goals.
Yeah, the way of goals is a big thing, particularly because Houston, kind of the inverse of Seattle, Houston has never won at CenturyLink Field under any name. Only one of their away results this season would have been good enough to advance with the way the way of goals have worked out. They were at DCU and won 3-1, and none of Seattle's home losses would have been enough for Houston to advance. The numbers are pretty clear. Whether you want to break it down traditionally or, you know, use more advanced metrics like 538, the chances right now that Seattle makes a return to MLS Cup are quite strong. I think 538 has it at like 97%. And Seattle will know their opponent by then, if my memory of the MLS schedule is correct. I think you might know better than me. The Eastern Conference, I don't have to pay much attention
yep.
to that during the year.
But it will be on Wednesday night, yes.
Yeah, so they'll know. So they'll know where they're mm-hmm. going to head, and ideally there will be 50,000-plus people at CenturyLink Field celebrating that return. Last year there were a couple hundred in Colorado for the road clinching, and then a couple hundred more at a charter airfield here locally.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a bit different this year if they can do what the numbers and what history and what every possible projection has them slated to do next Thursday.
Yep, you are correct about that. Do you have to worry about yellow cards? Obviously, Roman Torres got booked in the first leg late in the match. Nohu Tolo was also booked middle of the second half. Obviously, one more yellow, and they are going to – one of those two miss the final.
Yellow card accumulation doesn't carry over to the final. It resets for the final. So it's only red cards or double yellows that will cause a player to miss the MLS Cup final. An extra week off for Ramon Torres – Ramon Torres is going to get some more time off, which is fine. He's kind of a big older guy, so it might be – able to break down. You know, it's interesting because Houston obviously will be without Jahlil Anibaba, who is their backup right back. So they're going to have their third string right back starting because AJ De La Garza was lost to an ACL tear late in the season. Jahlil Anibaba stepped up, took over at right back, and now he's out with a red. Houston will also be without Albert Elis, who got his yellow card accumulation in the first leg, where Seattle will be without Ramon Torres. That's the yellow card updates. I can give you a quick injury update with the Sounders.
Please do.
They were out of practice today. A few of the veterans were inside working out. Clint Dempsey, Gustav Svensson, Stephen Fry, who post-game, Brian Smetzer said, if it was an MLS Cup, he probably starts. That's how the injury wasn't that big of a deal. But they chose to rest Fry. Who else? Osvaldo Alonso returned to practice. Half of it,
God.
He was a neutral, and the other half, he was a full participant in the short-sighted games. Jordan Morris, same case, returned to practice, was a neutral, and then participated. Alonso did not participate in the second set of drills. He was a non-participant in that. Jordan Morris was a full participant in that. Brad Evans, who no one expects to play again this year, he's recovering from some kind of pinched nerve or other kind of nerve damage in his back. They discovered this year that that was the reason why he had 18 months of leg pain in the same leg, whether it was calf or hamstring. It was all about nerve damage. He was actually kicking a ball today, which was great.
Okay, good. Good.
So you're likely to see Jordan Morris play on Thursday. Osvaldo Alonso, if they make MLS Cup, could make that return. Clint Dempsey will be at health. Gustav Svensson will be at health. And Stephen Fry is probably back as well. Brian Schmetzer is wary to give any updates at this point, so I just have my observation. He's like, I'm not even going to think about that until 2 days before the game. There's no point. We don't have to hurry anything right now. We've got a week.
That's right. You got a good solid week to go out there and go back to the MLS Cup final. Depending if it's in Toronto, or I'm assuming you'll be able to host it if it is Columbus that pulls off the miracle.
Columbus would host. It goes on regular season points. Not on conference standing.
Oh, no, I thought Seattle was ahead of Columbus, but I guess I was wrong, so that's fine. In the Supporters Shield points standings, that is. How was your Thanksgiving? What'd you do? Did your wife cook, or you went to family?
No, it was a team event with my wife, her best friend from a time when she lived in Wisconsin, and myself. We all made a dish that was exclusively ours, and then the turkey was a group event. The gravy was a group event.
The way
our tiny kitchen works out. But yeah, it was a mellow day. Today was kind of a light work day for my business, so I was able to catch some time at Sounders practice. Let's see, what did I learn Thanksgiving related? Brian Schmetzer made the turkey. He hosted about 22 people at his house.
There we go.
He and his wife did. He was the turkey and the gravy guy. No surprise here. Christian rolled on, hung out with the Jordan Morris family over at Jordan's house. Christian did bring cookies for some of the dessert. So those were the two people to find out that information about. But, yeah, the team was able to do Thanksgiving at home.
Hey, listen, I will never say no to cookies, man. Chocolate chip, shortbread, Chessmen cookies from Pepperidge Farm. I'll never say no to cookies. I'll definitely take that on. All right, Dave, thank you again. I hope you and your wife have a good evening. And talk to you next week, next Friday. Good luck in the second leg.
Thank you for having me on again. One thing I really want, your listeners to focus on, watch this game early because Seattle says they're going to come out and attack. They're going to play the first 30 minutes at home, kind of like they did the first 30 minutes on the road. They're going to be pursuing a goal. Brian Schmetzer said that two-goal lead, as the cliche says, is the most dangerous lead in soccer. So we hope to make it a three-goal lead rather quickly.
Absolutely, and I don't blame him at all. Thanks again, Dave, and I'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
All right, Dave Clark, Sounder at Heart, my SB Nation colleague, talking about the Sounders and what's going on with them. And it looks like they're ready to go. They want to put this thing to bed as soon as possible. Recorded interview now with my other colleague of SB Nation, Alex Stanek, on the Massive Report podcast, also part of the Massive Report website of SB Nation on the Columbus Crew. And here is that conversation right now.
Daniel Feuerstein here, the American Soccer Show MLS Cup Playoffs Conference Finals First Leg Review Show. Joining me right now to talk about that first leg scoreless draw, of course, from the Massive Report podcast, one of my colleagues of SB Nation, the Massive Report that covers the Columbus Crew, Alex Stanek, joins me right now. Alex, thank you again. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Well, it was nil-nil. I could say definitely a tale of two halves, but still, though, it's not the result I think the Crew wanted in one of possibly the final match of the season over at MAPRI Stadium.
Yeah, it was a kind of a cagey match. The first half especially, I thought the two teams were pretty even, but there was not a whole lot being created by either side. Both had kind of half chances, but I didn't think there was anything that was really of note in that first half. I thought as the match wore on, especially in the second half, the Crew started to wake up a little bit, started to see a little bit more creativity, a little bit more in terms of chances being created by Columbus, but definitely not the result that we were hoping for. Keeping a clean sheet is a big thing, especially with away goals being the tiebreaker, but we were definitely hoping to get a goal or two in Columbus, and we failed to do that.
Absolutely there, and all I can say is it just looked like, you know, Higuain wasn't himself. It looks like Awful wasn't himself. It looked like, you know, everyone, even Kamara. It just looked like in the first half, this is not the Columbus Crew side we've always expected to be, you know, great at home. You know, we have to cite the 4-1 first leg victory against New York City FC in the conference semifinals. But still, though, they just didn't look like themselves in the first half.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting thing to watch. I wasn't quite sure what was going on with them because they didn't seem like they were playing even their normal style. They seemed to be trying to rush things a little bit too much. They were just, Bradley especially, I thought was causing all kinds of problems for the Crew. They didn't really know how to deal with him. He was breaking up stuff. He was kind of dictating play at points during that first half especially. And they really seemed to kind of struggle, struggle to maintain possession, struggle to create anything in the attacking half. And it was a problem. But not conceding still gives us a chance to go to BMO and, mm-hmm. and get a result there. But it was definitely not the lead that we were hoping to have going into that second leg.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, though, that second half was just amazing. That second half was just absolutely amazing to see them. They flipped the switch. They went and attacked. They had so many chances. They should have put at least one or two past Bono. And unfortunately, if it wasn't Bono, it was the woodwork. But still a much better second half for the Crew as they really went out there. They tried to nick one in.
Yeah, and hopefully they can take that same sort of strategy that they were using in the second half and adapt that to play at BMO. I thought they did well in the second half. I thought Ola Kamara should have had a goal. I think he timed his jump wrong on one of those chances. We did hit the woodwork, created some attacking chances. The trick is going to be, can we go to Toronto with Jozy Altidore and with Sebastian Giovinco being back and still pull out a result there? Both teams need to score. Whichever team scores is going to win that game. It's basically a clean slate. They're going to have home field advantage. And they're going to have two of the better players in Major League Soccer back from suspension. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think a lot of fans here are still optimistic. I think a lot of fans felt if we get by Atlanta, we can get by anyone. Atlanta, for a lot of Crew fans, was kind of the matchup that we did not want. And we were able to get by them, so we'll see what happens in the second leg. But I know I'm biased, but I hope the Crew can get a result.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the one thing about the second leg. I think that Columbus, you know, if it remains nil-nil, I mean, it's kind of weird to say this, because you will, I mean, you know, if you lead or draw this match, obviously the away goals rule will be in your favor. But still, though, how do you feel or how do you perceive the second leg, you know, when Columbus scores? Do you feel you have to have at least a scoreless first half to, you know, put the entire place under nervous, you know, nerves? Or do you feel you want to get one early and then maybe somewhere in the middle of the second half, you get the second one, you can really put the fear in the fans of Toronto?
You know, I'm not sure. The one fear that I have is actually not about Toronto, it's about Greg Berhalter. Greg Berhalter, I think, has a tendency to bunker down a little bit too much in situations where he doesn't necessarily need a goal. I think that he could potentially leave it late. He could try to just defend at BMO, get a late goal, maybe bring on Kakuta Mane, somebody like that, in the second half and try to snatch it like we did in Columbus. But when we don't play our style, the players don't really react well to that. I think some of that might have been what we saw in the first leg. I think that they didn't seem like they were told to just go out there and have fun. When they're just having fun and going out there and doing their normal thing, it's a really kind of free-flowing, smooth style of soccer. I'm not sure that's what we saw, and I'm not sure that's what we're going to see in the second leg. If I were Greg Berhalter, I would say just go out there, do your normal game. If we get a goal, we get a goal. If we don't, we don't. But let's just stick to the system. And I think it's possible to get a result, but it's definitely going to be a much bigger challenge than it would have been had we gotten a goal at Maffrey Stadium.
Do you feel, because I think this is a great thing that Taylor Twellman said, I don't know if you're probably at Maffrey, but do you feel that because Josie and Giovinco, it wasn't just your typical 7-day, you know, break from, you know, from playing because of the suspensions that they got, of course, the yellow card accumulation suspension by Giovinco, the Jose Altidore one-game red card suspension for the little muck-up he did with Sasha Kleistein inside BMO Tunnel. It's going to be like 24 days. Do you feel that could be an advantage for Columbus, even though they haven't played for over 15, 20 days, those two?
I think it's possible. The big concern that I have for those two is Sebastian Giovinco, and it's not even so much his play. I do not believe that Major League Soccer wants MLS Cup in Columbus. I don't think that they want that. And so I'm not sure. I think Sebastian Giovinco is going to get a lot of calls. If he goes down, and he goes down pretty easy, in my opinion. And so if he starts diving a little bit or going down on soft challenges, things like that, I think you could see Toronto get a lot of free kicks, a lot of set pieces, crew pick up a lot of yellow cards. And I think that could change the tempo of the game, change the momentum of the game in a big way for Toronto. And so even if he's not on, in terms of his form, in terms of his shooting, in terms of his passing, things like that, I think he can dribble at guys and create fouls, or at least things that are very close to foul. And I think with that Toronto crowd behind them and with kind of something in the back of those refs' heads saying, yeah, we really don't want this in Columbus. It's going to be, we don't want the showcase match and that save the crew environment. I don't know. Maybe I'm being conspiratorial, but I'm nervous that they could get some penalties and things like that off of Giovinco, even if he's not in top form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Speaking about feeling conspiratorial and, you know, it's not that hard to believe that, because obviously, you know, I would love to talk about Columbus Crew on the pitch, on the field, you know, inside the stadium, how great they were, even though it was a 0-0 draw. Andy Edwards of NBC Sports Soccer made this article on the 21st, obviously about basically some sabotaging by Anthony Precourt, talking about not allowing all the Columbus Crew supporters to go inside the stadium to watch this sold-out crowd. And let's remind everyone, the crowd was sold out. Every single seat was sat on, the benches, the spaces were taken, and it sounds like sabotage from your owner because of the amount of lines, I should say, to get inside Maffrey Stadium, and it sounds like it was intentional.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that they were trying to do to kind of keep attendance low, which was surprising to me. So one thing they did, which they had never done before, was they listed a lot of the seats in the upper deck as obstructed view. Anyone who's ever been to Monterey Stadium knows that it's not an obstructed view from the upper deck. But on Ticketmaster, sites like that, they listed it as obstructed view. You might not be able to see the whole game. A disclaimer before you buy the ticket. So even then, we were kind of like, okay, this is interesting. And then the match sold out, and they started selling standing room only tickets. We were hoping that they would put bleachers on the stage at Monterey Stadium on the north end. There's a big stage for concerts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
For really big games, they have always put bleachers in there, and you can fit a couple thousand more people in. They declined to do that. They just didn't want any more people in there than was capacity plus standing room only. I actually walked around the stadium in the second half with some friends of mine just to kind of get a feel for how many people were there. And the standing room only crowd were three people deep all the way around the bowl of Monterey Stadium. So it was a very large crowd. Every seat was filled plus all of those people standing. It was an incredible atmosphere. But because of these delays, there is all this security that we have never had before. Really intrusive security. They were taking forever to get people through. My friends who were coming to the game showed up, I think, about an hour early. They didn't get into the game till a half hour after kickoff. So a really incredible slow line that went throughout the entire parking lot. Who knows how many people just said forget it and left early. But it was a really kind of sad situation. The fans are working their tails off trying to make sure that they have the full crowd behind them, and it does seem like ownership here in Columbus is trying to hurt that in just an effort to make it look like there's not much support here in Columbus.
And this is from a tweet inside Mr. Edwards' article from a Leigh Reynolds, also a fellow Columbus Crew supporter for you. She tweeted with a picture of that exact thing that you're talking about. Long lines, a gate not all the way open. She goes, 5 minutes before the game, lines are long. Anthony Precourt, the game is a sellout. Fans can't get in. Save the Crew, hashtag MLS Cup playoffs. You know, this is really, MLS right now, along with Mr. Precourt, which you expect that from Mr. Precourt. But what really is disheartening is that Major League Soccer at this particular point in time, and this is the only evidence that, you know, you can definitely say that the league is allowing Mr. Precourt to pull shenanigans right out of his hat. Well, I can't say that word, but out of his backside. And it's just really terrible to see that.
Yeah, it is. And it's been disappointing for us. I mean, we've always kind of felt like Mr. Garber is not a huge fan of Columbus. From comments he has made in the past about certain markets not being as glamorous as others. It's fine if he doesn't think Columbus is a glamorous city. It's a city that has supported this team for over two decades. It's a city that has never once had the lowest attendance in the league. It's a city that was the first charter member of this new league and the first soccer-specific stadium. And a lot of milestones in this town. And we definitely want to keep our team. And to see the league encouraging it is very frustrating. We would hope that at the very least they would be neutral in everything. And we would hope, in an ideal situation, that they would be trying to find a solution here. One of the three stars in the new Major League Soccer crest is community.
That's right.
How are we supposed to believe that they support community if they're encouraging an owner to abandon that community in search of bigger profits? It's really disheartening. I feel bad for Columbus fans. I feel bad for fans around the league, honestly, because if this can happen in the first soccer market ever, the home of Dos Acero, if it can happen here, it can happen anywhere. And I kind of think that's what Don Garber wants. He wants to put every other city on notice and say, hey, if you don't give us that free stadium that we want, hey, if you don't buy those season tickets, we'll move you. We'll destroy your history. We'll destroy everything. We'll leave you with nothing. And that's not the league that I think most of us want to support. And it's been a wake-up call, unfortunately, for a lot of us here in Columbus.
No, I know it has, and hopefully the Crew will be saved, and you know that you have my support, because this is just the wrong way to do things, and it's just terrible to see this happen. Alex, as always, thank you so much. Good luck in the second leg, and I'll talk to you next time, okay?
Thank you so much.
And that is Alex Stanek from the Massive Report, following the Columbus Crew, another SB Nation colleague, as we get ready for these big second legs, as we get ready for these huge games coming up. It will all determine where the final will be in the Eastern Conference, either in Toronto or in Columbus. And all you can say is that it's just been absolutely unbelievable of the playoff moments we've had here. But it's also been a bit of a somber, sad note because of the situation involving the Columbus Crew moving to Austin, Texas. It's just been unbelievable what we have seen, and you would like to think that this type of a situation could never happen, and it is. Now, obviously, it's a different thing because of the San Jose situation where the original Quakes moved to Houston, and then all of a sudden the Earthquakes came back, and they have their own stadium now, obviously, and everything else, but still, though, they did make a promise to return the Earthquakes to San Jose. They are back in the league. And all these statistics going forward about what needs to be fixed, I guess, and what needs to be done, what needs to be changed if possible, it's just terrible. I want to go on and by saying that, when I interviewed Alex for the recording of the segment, that is something that I think is just absolutely a low blow. Anthony Precourt, and I think Don Garber, should also explain himself with these situations as well. Look, if you want to basically, on its own merit, say we're going to move the Crew to Austin, Texas, and then you have Anthony Precourt intentionally closing down some of the gates going into the stadium up at Mopri Stadium and allowing lines all the way into the parking lot, intentionally doing this. To me, this is a low blow. The game is a sellout, and yes, they sold it out, but at the beginning, there wasn't a lot of people. Well, now we know why. It was done intentionally by Anthony Precourt. And to see him do this, to see him go out there and intentionally preventing his own sellout is just absolutely mind-boggling. Not adding those seats behind the goal where that big stage is on the left side, or at least I would assume it's the north side of the stadium. That is an absolute travesty. Not adding the seats below that little secondary deck on the other side of the stadium, on the other side of that net, that sometimes is there as well, that's gone too. It is just an absolute shame and a travesty to see Anthony Precourt intentionally sabotaging his own club just so he can move them to Austin, Texas. I don't know what to say anymore, folks. I mean, if Don Garber is allowing Anthony Precourt to pull these shenanigans, well, then maybe it's time for Don Garber to step down as commissioner of Major League Soccer. And maybe it's time for him to just say, you know what? I've muddied the waters way too much here. Maybe it's time for the owners to just change the commissioner of the league and just get somebody else that understands what those three stars in that league shield is about. One of them is community. And right now, Don Garber is allowing Anthony Precourt to rip up that community. And we will see what happens if, and only if, the people of Austin, Texas, do they want this situation to happen? Do they want this situation to happen? Do they not want this situation to happen? All I can say is that it's really getting to the point where it's getting ridiculous, and I hope that we can just get some regular normality back in MLS, because right now it's just terrible. And I even said this many, many times. And this also goes to those fans in Orlando. You've earned your club coming to MLS. You earned, Bill, that stadium on Church Street. The Purple Palace on Church Street. Thank God it was built, because let's be honest, I know you could have had a lot more people at the Citrus Bowl, but the truth is you really needed your own stadium. And once again, all I can say is this, is that you got jerked around too, Orlando City supporters. You got jerked around too by Don Garber back in the day when he was begging, pleading, and hoping to get New York City FC into MLS. He flew down to Orlando, gave you a nice speech. It's not a matter of if, but a when. When? Well, you didn't take that lying down, Orlando City supporters. You didn't take that lying down, did you? No. You went out there and you proved to Commissioner Don Garber, you proved to him that you deserve to be in MLS. The club also earned the right to prove that they belong in MLS. And even though it got shoehorned, and even though New York City FC was forced to be born, the truth of the matter is this. You said we want in, and we will do it, banging down the door very loudly. But once again, Don Garber was not going to allow you to be born. Why? Because he wanted MLS and he wanted the teams that he wants in the league to be brought in first. Well, you weren't going to be there first. New York City FC was going to be first. And New York City FC so far, I mean, they're looking okay. But the truth is that they were always going to be prioritized first before anything Orlando was going to be a part of. That's Don Garber. That is Don Garber. And that's a shame, because to me, Orlando deserved it more to be in the league, than the secondary NYCFC side in MLS. That's the truth. That is the truth. It hurts. But once again, Columbus is falling hard because of these so-called financial statistics. Could things have been maybe a little bit better? Maybe so. I don't know. I need to talk to this Columbus Business Council. Would love for them to come on the show and discuss their situation. And hopefully, the Columbus crew will remain in Columbus. But if not, at least let's hope the rights can be purchased. Let's hope that the name, the shield, the history books remains intact. And hopefully Columbus will not be gone from the league radar. And at the same time, whether they do build a brand new downtown soccer stadium, which would be nice, I think it would also be fantastic if they could maybe refurbish what will be soon back again once Mopfrey is done with Columbus, hopefully back as Columbus Crew Stadium. It is just not – it's just one of those things where you just wish things would change. And hopefully there will be a lifeline coming from the Austin side of things. Of course, there's that one sitting judge in the San Antonio in the county of Austin. I believe it's the same county – or it could be different. I have to look. I'm not sure. So don't hold me to it, but we'll see what happens. But we'll hopefully we will see some form of normality come, because this is just not right and it's not fair. And, you know, just like I talked about the playoffs, there's a caveat. And that is the situation of the Columbus Crew. We can't really fully talk about these playoffs because of the situation that the Columbus Crew and the city of Columbus are in with owner Anthony Precourt. It looks like, once again, Commissioner Don Garber is with Mr. Precourt. We know that the mayor of Columbus was in New York City to talk to them about maybe purchasing the team, and they're not budging from that purchase, because they don't want anyone to purchase the team. They would rather have a Precourt. Now, what happens, let's just say for the heck of it, that what's going on with this thing, MLS to Austin, happen? What happens if it falls through? What happens if this situation falls through and Precourt can't move to Austin? What would happen then? Well, obviously they'd stay in Columbus, but would he shut them down? I mean, that's the big worry, isn't it? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but you never know. You have to look at every single possible angle that could happen, either positive or negative, from both the Columbus side of things as well as the Precourt MLS side of things. That is what you need to think about. That's what you need to worry about. And you just have to say, you got to be concerned. You got to be concerned of what could be up the sleeve of the league, as well as Precourt. So we'll see what happens. So that's all I'm saying, guys. That's all I'm saying. And we just have to hope. Just have to hope that the Columbus Crew will be saved. Like I said, I'm in their corner. I'm in their corner. I want them to remain in Columbus. And all I can say is, let Anthony Precourt join the ownership group that wants to bring back the Austin Aztecs, even though it's into the fold in USL. Let him be a part of that ownership group to bring back the Aztecs and try and put them into MLS. And then I think it'd be a lot better. But that's all I can say. That's all I can say. And hopefully we will see what will happen down the road. But I want to thank my guests again tonight. Dave Clark, Sounder at Heart. Alex Stanek, the Massive Report podcast and Massive Report site. Both SB Nation colleagues. Thank them both once again for coming on the show. Join me next Friday as we will review the conference finals second leg. And all I can say is, it should be a better second leg, and we'll see what will happen when these sides meet up. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for joining me tonight. Join me this coming Monday night for another Feuerstein's Fire show. Great show as well. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. And once again, have a happy Thanksgiving. And talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.